Hey, I'm Jason, and welcome to Season 3 of the Tales from the Pit podcast. Welcome to Tales from the Pit, the behind-the-lens access to the entertainment world and the creative people involved. Today is our part two with music photographer Danilo Lewis. We hope you enjoy it. All right, so Chainsmokers, you've been touring with them, Florida, Georgia line. So walk me through some of the artists you've been touring with and how did you get involved with that? I'm assuming it's all just kind of connections through existing shows and stuff, but go ahead.
Existing shows and as well as management, labels, a lot of labels and PR people, you know, they like what you do. They're going to recommend it to their clients. I've done so many DJs from DJ Snake, C-Ray Oki, Nicky Romero, Above and Beyond. Like, whoa, I could keep going. I could actually look at, I have these things here that are like on my desk that are like lanyards. You know,
yeah.
Hang up. So I could just say like, oh yeah, the Florida Georgia Line, Tiesto, Zed. if it's a DJ, I probably have gone on tour with you and done something with you. I love when I moved to LA. It's when I started doing more of the bands, more of the live acts. You know, I've done everything from The Score, that's alternative rock, to Coldplay. Getting ready, hopefully. By the end of the year, jump on the Coldplay tour. It's everything in between. To me, is like, you know, being in the business of not picking sides.
Yep.
And a lot of people say like, oh, I don't like country music. I don't want to go shoot that. I was like, well, you're missing out. Country music shows and tours and festivals are incredible.
Yep.
You know, go shoot that. You know, I've shot jam bands, you know, Humphries McGee. And I'm trying to think. There's one act that every time I see it, like whenever I go on like my hard drive, so I'll see the name. I'm like, I don't even remember shooting this, but it's great. I try to just be as versatile as possible. Early on in my career, especially when I was trying to shoot more bands, I was always met with, he's the DJ guy. Could he really shoot this? And it was an uphill battle to be like, no, I shoot a lot of it. I've shot weddings, you know, just be versatile. You know, I love being in a studio setting. I love doing portraits of artists. I love going, especially in LA, I do this a lot in LA, which I don't post often, but it's one of my favorite things of work that I do is I get a lot of labels will say, do you mind going with such and such artists and take them out and just walk around and just, let's just do photos. I love that. I've gotten to know more artists like that personally than on tour. I may have like maybe 5-6 hours, but by the time I'm done, I'm pretty sure we're already planning like, oh, we're going to go to dinner and then we're going to go to a party. Yeah. So I try to do everything. I try to do it all.
I'm going to pause right there. Sorry. I was going to say, I'm going to pause. We're in an hour. Are you okay with time? Can we keep going or do you need to cut off? All right. Because I haven't even got into the technical stuff yet. So I got tons of questions for you. All right, cool.
No worries. I'm good.
If you do feel you need to drop, just let me know. But
I'll
go for a little bit longer.
Yeah.
All right. So the move to LA, was that just something that happened recently? Was that for this because of what you're doing or was that just a personal thing?
To me, it was one of those things where I was like, I had been in DC in that scene for quite some time. And from a venue, I was already working at the number one venue in DC. That venue was also voted number one club in the world. Nice. While I was there, I was like, well, there is no bigger club than this. Where do I go from here? And, you know, it's, as much as I love to network, you are missing opportunities if you're not in the spaces where a lot of these industries live. can you be successful without living in Los Angeles? Yes, of course you can. I know plenty of photographers and videographers who live in Houston or random cities and tour the world, you know, left and right. Yes, you can. But that, that's the 1%, you know, for lack of a better term, that's the 1%. That doesn't happen to everybody. You know, to me is like, I remember I moved to LA, day two of me being here, I went to a coffee shop, ran into an artist manager that I have known for a year. I hadn't seen him in 4 or 5 years. And we he was there just by himself. I was there by myself. Ended up talking for 3 hours at the coffee shop, and I had booked 2 tours. So to me, I was like, I can't replace that. I can't replace that in DC. That would have never happened. I would have never had the opportunity of knowing that. Not to say that you need to do it, but it does help. You know, the music industry was in New York, and then it all migrated to Los Angeles. You can't ignore those kind of shifts. But you still can be successful. You can still do it. It's just harder. And for me, it was like, I just saw the writing on the wall that I was like, well, what else can I get from being here? Where do I want to go? What do I want to do? And all the things I wanted to do told me that I needed to take that step to be where everyone was, to be present where everybody was, you know, go be that social butterfly. You just never know.
Yep.
So that's kind of brought me here.
Cool. That, and it's definitely a climate change or a temperature change. That's for sure.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
We were trying to schedule this yesterday, I'm in the middle of a huge nor'easter snowstorm trying to get this done.
And today was like a beautiful sunny day. Like it was 68 maybe.
Oh, jeez. Oh, nice. So let's start getting into a little bit of technical stuff. So equipment, what is your, you know, what's your equipment of choice? What are you using? You said you're using 2 cameras, 2 bodies. What do you got going on?
Not to plug them, because I've learned I got to stop plugging anybody when it comes to equipment. I have been shooting Canon my entire life. Mm-hmm. I haven't upgraded to the mirrorless system yet.
Okay.
Because I'm weighing out options. You know, so there are other brands out there that are being much nicer to me than Canon is. But, and, you know, I'm open. My doors are open. You want to throw equipment at me, we can talk. Yep. I'm 2 cameras. I love 1DX Mark II, Mark III, the 5D Mark IV. That to me, the 5D Mark IV is probably one of the most flawless cameras in the world.
Yep.
I say the 1DX Mark II is probably, not counting mirrorless, is probably the best camera that Canon has ever made. That thing you could toss it from a building, that it will still function. That is a tank of a camera. But I do know, you know, you've got to keep up with the times. Mirrorless is next. This is what it is. I've just learned from being in LA not to give free plugs to any brands, any camera makers. You know what? You know where I'm at. You know what I do. You want me to shoot your brand? We can talk. In the meantime, I'm still going to shoot. I'm still going to use what I have. But yeah.
Yep. What about lenses? What's your lens of choice?
I do all the Trinity of zooms are my go-tos always. Yep. 16-35, 24-70, 70-200.
Yep.
I'm a big 35 millimeter guy. I have never, not that I've never liked it. I just have never found much use for a 50 millimeter on tour or at festivals.
Yep.
It's too specific for me.
It's very tight. Like
And I've never been able to get anything aside from like portraits of like fans and things like that. I've never been able to get anything from a festival perspective that blew my mind. So even though I have a 50, I don't use it for that. I have 2 fisheyes. I have the new 18-15, and I still have the old 15 millimeter 2.8 because it's just as fast as hell. I don't take it out too often because it's a very fragile piece of glass now, very rare. So I'm trying to prolong its life for as long as possible. If I'm taking it out, it's because it is dark where I'm at and, you know, to the rescue type thing. What else do I have? I do have extenders for the 7200. I used to have a 24 1.4, but again, that was another focal length that I didn't find was huge because I had the 16-35 and the 24-70.
Right.
It made no sense. that's where I'm at with lenses now. Yeah.
Are you using then, those extenders much? Do you use those that much?
I have used them. I like to use them in daytime more than right. nighttime, obviously, because right. you lose mm-hmm. A lot of the aperture on it. In daytime, you can create some shots. I've taken some photos that the festival owners and like marketing teams are like, "Where were you?" When I was like, and I was like, "You wouldn't believe where I was. If I told you where I was, you won't believe it."
The parking lot.
yeah, but it gives like such a crazy perspective of including so much, but you're still getting really up close.
Yep.
I haven't used it much at night. There's been a few times like I depending on like the festival where front of house is, sometimes you may need it. Trying to remember the festival. I think not Lollapalooza main. Yeah, actually, Lollapalooza main stage has a really far front of house.
Yeah,
that you're gonna need that. I mean, the 7200 is perfect, but if you're trying to get a tighter shot of an artist that you would with a 7200 at a normal distance of a front of house, you're gonna need it. It just won't look. You won't be able to get the looks that you're like going for. Yeah.
Yep. And rarely do I have to shoot super far away because our venue is obviously very specific, and it's usually front of house or in the pit is usually the two most common shots, and the 7200 usually covers that. But there's been times where I actually pulled out the 600 and I love the lens. I'm just not a fan of using it because it's so heavy and so challenging. You have to be on a monopod or whatever, and it's just such a challenge to get a moving artist and stuff like that.
I was recently thinking about that because I recently shot the Super Bowl and the 600 or 400, 600s.
Yeah.
I feel like they're giving them away at the Super Bowl. Maybe that's the case because everyone had one.
Yeah, no.
And I was just like, wow, do we all get one too? But I kept thinking, I was like, man, like, I wonder what I could do with one of these, like on a tour. I mean, but it's a very specific glass.
Yep.
But some of the images I see, I'm just like blown away. I'm like, wow.
Yeah, it was, I really liked it, but it was a lot of work for me. Just lugging it around and then just really, really zooming out to kind of see where I'm at and then zooming back in to kind of catch the artist and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of work and I was like, I don't have much time, so I don't want to spend too much time fighting with a lens versus getting the shots and stuff like that.
I could see that, yeah. I mean, I feel the same with the extenders. Sometimes I'm like, oh man, like now I have to remove the extender, put the lens, and then, you know, it's too much sometimes. I'm like, it's just better off just to leave it.
Are you changing lenses during a set at all?
Yes, I am. I'll always start 24-70, 7200. That's how I always start. And throughout the set, I'll pop in the whites when I'm front of house or on the sides of the stage. Sometimes the fisheye as well. If I'm on stage, I mean, I'm still switching there. I'm using all of it all the time. And obviously on tour, you have the privilege that you don't have to always use everything all at once. You know, I was like, you know what, this show I'll use this, and next show I'll use that. And you change it up and you mix it. With festivals, you try to kind of, like I said, it's that 360 sort of model of like trying to get everything. So that changing the lenses just kind of gives you just a bit of extra shots that you can add to your delivery. I am, it's sometimes nerve wracking. If you're like if I'm going in, I will never change a lens. If I'm in the crowd, everything stays. But if I have open space and like no one, you know, you slowly, you know, all that. Yeah.
So, yeah. You're surrounded by a bunch of screaming, drinking fans. And last thing you want is your glass to get covered in something.
Yeah. Or give anybody the idea of like, oh, he put away
right
his lens in this side, and you know, you never know who you're around, so
yeah, of
you
course gotta be sure too. Yeah, sure. What is your, so for your editing process, how many images are you usually shooting for a tour? When you're on a tour per night, are you shooting like a couple hundred or just
for a tour all day, including all day, you know,
right,
from 8 a.m till midnight, I will probably take anywhere between 1,000 and 1,600, depending on the show, depending on the size of the show, depending on what happened that day. Sometimes we do more just because like we went out and did stuff. Sometimes it's less because we didn't leave the arena. But there's like, especially in those kind of those heavy like arena tours, there's so many things happening. The show involves so many production details and aspects that you're trying to capture everything all at once. And I rather have more than less. You know, I'd rather be able to say like, oh, you know what? If I didn't get that, I know I probably have it later on in another shot. Because there's been plenty of times I've known the show like the back of my hand, I may still miss a pyro shot. Sure. Just because I was like maybe moving around or wasn't paying attention. So the more the merrier, and you kind of want to then go back to the quality of what you deliver. So
how are you deciding which images? I mean, because that's, you know, 1600 images, you got to go through that pretty quickly. How are you calling them? How are you deciding what sticks to you, you know, what sticks out and stuff like that?
I do that on a, from a tour perspective, on an artist by artist basis, like case by case basis. I know what certain artists likes. So I'm in camera, I'm already adding a star to it. As I'm walking around, if I'm moving, I'm looking through my images real quick, just to see what I want to get. I would say on average, I would probably star 100 to 120 photos throughout a show. And I go through those first. I try to pick through those first. If there was something I might have missed or I picked the wrong one, then I'll go back and forth between whatever is next to that one.
Yep.
But that's kind of my process. Is in camera, I'm already doing the starring. So when I get to, you know, Lightroom, you know, the star is already going to show there. So I go directly to those photos first. It makes it easier. You know, this way I'm not going one by one once I'm done with the show.
Are you ever going, I mean, you kind of mentioned this earlier, but do you ever go back to images later on and say, all right, now I want to spend some quality time with some of these shots that I took later, you know, or I forgot about these. Let's kind of make some cool stuff out of them.
I used to do that all the time where I was like, oh, I just want to see what else I got. Lately, I've gotten into a terrible habit that I won't post or share much. And then one day I'm like just doing work in my computer. I'm like, let me go back to this album. Did I miss something? And out of nowhere, all of a sudden, I have like 30 photos that I've re-edited, trying new things. Like if you look at my feed now, that is an experiment that's happening right now where it's like, what's on my feed, I haven't delivered to a client. That's just me doing something for me where I'm like, I just want to see what happens. You know, I sometimes start a certain way and by the time I'm done, I'm like, I can't even tell you where I was going when I started. And sometimes I share it, sometimes I don't. And it changes for me, like where I'm at mentally, especially with social media. Sometimes I'm like, right now I'm in this space where I'm like, what, it's there, whatever.
Yep.
I'm busy, it doesn't matter. I'll share some things. Like there's a lot of things that I'm like, all right, you know what, I'm sharing this. It happened maybe 5 minutes. Like I posted a video of me being at the 50 yard line. Like 30 minutes after me being there, I was like, this was way too cool not to post. And there's other things where I'm like, you know, I did some stuff for Drake recently and I've only shared 6 images.
Right.
And will I share more again? I probably not. Maybe like next year I'll go back and I'm like, oh, you know what? I kind of like these other photos. Maybe I should share these other photos. But yeah, it's hit or miss with me with it, whether I'll go back or not. Right now, it's taking me a lot more time to want to share more. I don't know why, but it's just this way. Right now, it's just the exploring side of things right now.
Yep. Yeah, sure. You mentioned video. Are you doing any video at all?
No, I started doing video.
Did you? Okay,
When I first got into working in nightclubs, I was doing video. Oh, okay. I added photos, but to me, I wanted to do more video. But then I don't know what happened. Everyone just wanted more of my photos and more of my videos. And that's where it went. And I've never looked back. Yeah.
Nice.
So just photos. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And this video, I mean, I'm kind of in the between. They started asking me to do a lot more video now. And I got to say, video is a lot of work. That's a lot more work than photos by a long shot.
The one thing I'm getting asked recently, it's, you know, more of that short form TikTok reels content where I'm like, I'll roll my eyes. I'm like, okay, sure.
It pays the bills, but it's, yeah, it doesn't fill the.
You know, you got to be able to adapt. You know?
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. When it comes to being on the road and stuff like that, what was your typical day like on a specific tour day? What was your routine for a day?
I'm an early riser.
Yep.
At home, on tour, it doesn't matter. Yeah, if I'm going to bed at 4 a.m., I'm not getting up at 7. But usually we're in bed by 1 on a tour because the show is done at 11:30. I'm done editing by 12:30. The artist comes back to the bus. We're already moving to the next city. And once that bus starts moving, my brain just shuts off. I'm like, done. That's it. In the bunk. Out. I've already done my job. I already delivered the photos. The artists, they can do whatever they want now. But I wake up 7:30, 8 latest. I go and usually we'll have like our team always gets us an office, a content office that we have. I'll go and set up all my stuff in there, get ready for the day, and wait for the artist to wake up and walk in, and we'll start mapping out. Sometimes we'll have days where we plan to go out and do stuff. Sometimes they don't want to do anything and you just kind of just roll with it. You know, a lot of the times it's a very mundane type of day. Like most people think we're probably having crazy parties every day. It's like, no, you know, we'll go work out, have lunch, then dinner, and then prepare for the show. You know, by 6 p.m., you know, we're doing interviews, VIP runs, then it's quiet time, you know, for the artists to, you know, have their own time, you know, rest their voice, do a little bit of, you know, voice lessons, whatever the case may be. And then, you know, shows, you know, by 10 show starting. So it's, you know, a lot of it is repetitive. A lot of it is just getting used to a routine. But sometimes you get those days where you may just go, you know, go-kart riding or shoot guns or whatever, you know, and those days are always fun because it just kind of breaks the day. But a lot of times it's the same schedule every single day. There's nothing romantic to it. There's nothing glamorous to it. It's work. You know, you're there to work.
So when you travel, I mean, you're traveling international too. So you're doing a lot of international tours and stuff like that. Do you have any spots that were like places you'd like to go that you haven't, or favorite places that you have, you know, you like going back to and stuff like that?
So my favorite places that I've been, that I love, my number one is Tokyo.
Oh, nice.
If someone offered me a random $60,000 a year job to go there, I would move tomorrow.
Yeah.
That place, I love that country. People are incredible. The culture is incredible. Everything there. I've never found anything that I've been like, I don't like this. I love everything about Tokyo. Cool. But I've had great times in Argentina, Buenos Aires. Singapore is amazing. Plenty of European cities are always really nice. You know, a lot of culture. Some of the places I've never been to, I love to go to. Probably nothing related to music. I don't think anybody. I mean, I've seen shows that have happened in Cairo with the pyramids in the background. I've seen shows that does happen. I don't think I'll ever be there for that.
That would be incredible. I mean,
it would be amazing. But yeah, you know what place that's really, really, once you get there, you don't think, you know, this is a perception that you may have based on where you're from that you think, this place won't be amazing. It's Saudi Arabia.
Yep.
You know, it's an incredible country.
Yep.
You know, it's not what people think. At least I had a perception of it growing up here, everything I know. And I got there, I was like, I love this place. I love the food, the people, everything. I love doing that kind of stuff where you don't know what to expect. And then you go there and your mind's blown away. You know, same thing like Goa, India. To me, I was like, where is Goa? Why are we going there? Like, it seems like it's in the middle of nowhere, which it is. You know, the airport is like 2 hours away from where you're usually playing the venues. But you get there and it has like an island vibe to it that I didn't know it would have that kind of vibe. And you just kind of immerse yourself in it. For me, like I would say Cairo is probably my number one spot that I would want to go, not related to music.
Yeah.
I think most of the places I want to go, like I want to go to Zambia and see safaris. I want to like, I sometimes like I get so wrapped up in my work that I'm learning now. I know it's never too late to learn it, but I'm enjoying now saying, you know what? I don't need to bring my camera everywhere. Maybe it's just okay for me to just enjoy it with my own eyes and just enjoy what's happening in this moment. And I've been doing that a lot lately, where it's like the camera's staying at home and just kind of living in that moment now. Yeah.
When you're doing the international traveling and stuff like that, are you still capable of bringing all your gear? Are you limited? How does that work for the international?
No, I still bring everything. Everything fits in the backpack or on a case. You try not to. The one thing is, like, when you're doing this kind of tours, you don't want to check any bags in, because then that just ruins time. You know, you're such a strict time constraint that everything's got to be carry on. It's a pain just because obviously you're carrying a lot of equipment. It's heavy.
Yeah.
But you can. I do it. I may leave, like, I may not carry two fisheyes, for example. I have actually been traveling with the extenders recently, on a couple, like, we were in Asia and Europe late last year, and I did bring both of those. And I think I used one of the extenders one time. Cool. Again, it depends, but again, have the stuff that you think you're going to need, because you just don't know what you may want to do.
So, I mean, you've been super busy, so much cool stuff going on. I mean, you've been bouncing around all over the place, and then COVID happens.
Yeah.
What does that do to you during that time? 2020, March 2020, what happens to you?
Honestly, that affected me hard, because you're so used to being out. You're so used to having an identity based on your job. And you're not only losing the way you make a living, you know, you don't know what's going to happen, you know, especially in LA, everything was closed. There was no production, no shoots, nothing.
Right.
Even if touring wasn't there, like for me now, I still have a lot of work in LA that I do with a lot of different companies, but none of that was there. You know, there was nothing happening. And at the very beginning, I took that very hard. I was like super depressed. You know, it feels like something was ripped away from me that you love. Little by little, you kind of come out of it, you know, from an LA perspective. You know, like, all our creator friends, they're like all my photographers, videographers, we have a big group of friends here. We all got bicycles. And because the only thing you could do was outdoor activities, there was no cars in the road. So we just rode bikes. You know, we wore masks, but we rode bikes everywhere. You know, golf was another thing. You know, it's like everyone that I play golf with now works in the music industry in some capacity or another.
Yep.
Whether it's artist managers, artists themselves, A&Rs, whatever. We have, like, I think our group started with like maybe like 6-7 guys. I looked the other day, just because out of a joke, we added like new guys, and we're up to 73 people in this golf group chat. And it all started there. You know, to me, it was hard coming out of it. There was a period of time that even the productions were kind of starting. It was very, you know, LA is the land of a million jobs for 10,000 photographers, you know, per se, right?
Sure.
All of a sudden it became one job for a million photographers. And, you know, you may get it, you may not get it. I was lucky. I got a couple of things. Chainsmokers, I was, you know, very lucky that they had three very big campaigns happening. And instead of, you know, letting those brands and companies hire their own guy, they told them to hire me. That, you know, pretty much saved COVID for me. If it wasn't for them, it would have been extremely, extremely terrible. Mm-hmm. Everything was like super guerrilla style. You know, before COVID started, I had one shoot with them for a magazine shoot. I had a staff of 20 people from wardrobe, lighting, you name it. By the time the shoot was postponed and rescheduled 7 times because of COVID, because we didn't know. Right. By the time it came around, like 3 months later when we shot it, I had a staff of 3, and that was it. That was maximum. I couldn't have anything more. you know, and you kind of just roll with the punches, you know, you just, you learn to be, you know, to have five jobs, you know. You know, I had a great assistants who did seven jobs for me that normally they wouldn't have, you know, for, and they weren't getting paid to do those jobs because there was no allocation for that anymore, you know. I'm thankful for that. But yeah, it was tough. It was tough, man.
Yeah. I mean, the music industry, the live industry was the first one to shut down and pretty much the last one to start back up.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases.
Before touring or even concerts, because touring was the last one. Technically, touring was the last one. First, it was like nightclubs and bigger venues, et cetera. Before any of that opened, I went to shoot photos at a car dealership. I was like, I like taking photos. I'm good at what I do.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I can take photos of cars. How hard could it be? It's not moving. And even if it's moving, I know how to take photos of a moving subject. It's okay. I get it. And I did it for 6 months.
Yeah.
And in the 6 months, it was like, you know, you could see it. You could see everything little by little. This venue opened because this venue opened and these three other venues here opened. You could sense it, that it was electric. It was like everyone was ready. Just open everything up. Yep. Let's have 100 festivals tomorrow type deal. And the moment like I got the calls, like, hey, we're back on the road. I was like, dealership guys, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity. Have fun.
Yep. Yep. And I've noticed, you know, we shut down obviously for 2020. The funny thing for me is I was in 2019, I was using the Canon 5D Mark IV and Panasonic GH5. Those were my go-to cameras, for one for video, one for stills. In beginning of 2020, I got all new camera equipment. I went out and bought all the Sony mirrorlesses, all new lenses and everything. And then all of a sudden everything shut down. I was like, well, damn, I just spent all this money and I have nothing to show for it.
I had a 1DX Mark III on order, but it was back order. And I remember the week of when everything closed, it was like, oh, well, everything will be up and back in 2 weeks. I was like, I looked at it. I was like, you know what? Maybe we should cancel this order. Yeah. I went to B&H. I was like, yeah, I let's get this money back. I was like, we're not going to use this camera.
Yep. So, smart move too.
And that's why I haven't changed. I haven't changed to any of the mirrorless just yet.
And I'll say, you know, jumping from the 5D to the mirrorless was a huge difference in regards to A, the weight of the camera, and B, the actual sensor. The sensor, you know, low light, all that stuff is just huge, huge improvement for me. I just noticed it immediately. Yeah. So what I'm noticing now is, you know, I think it's pretty obvious, but in 2021, we opened back up and we had to do the first half of the season was sort of the, I forgot what we call it, with the half venues where everyone was spaced out and all that sort of stuff. Which was, it is what it is. It was just the requirements at the time, but it really made no logical sense because you still have a line of 100 people in the bathroom all standing together, but you can't sit next to each other.
There's so many things that I would walk around and be like, do you guys not see the logistics of this? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. But show wise, I think the crowds and the bands have been more insane in the last 2 years than prior. I mean, the crowds have been nuts these last couple of years. Yeah. I'm assuming you see that as well.
Yeah, I love it. Honestly, like I love seeing these kids. It's like they just want to rage. And before, there would be times where I would go to certain festivals or we would have certain shows and I would always go like, oh, I don't want to go in this crowd. Like this is too much. This is too much for me. And now I'm like, yes, more raging. Let's go crazier.
Yep.
You know, sometimes there would be times in 2019 where I would tell some kids, I was like, all right, relax, have some water. Like you're going, you know, you're going to get, you know, something's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now I'm just like, you know what? Do whatever you want to do. Like, I want to see more of it.
Yeah. And there's, I think the shows have really brought back a lot more energy too. So a lot of the bands and artists and DJs and all that stuff, there's a lot more production involved. There's a lot more energy on the stage. I just think across the board, everything has been elevated to a new level now.
Yeah. The one thing I would say is that has changed very drastically is obviously a lot of the smaller festival producers, independent producers are going away, which is kind of sad. And also with it, then becomes this big monopoly of controlling what yep. fees are being paid and what budgets yep. are being approved. And it's like, it feels like a bigger battle now than it's been in the past where I'm like, but so much stuff is happening now. But I feel like everyone's being so careful because we don't know what could happen next now. We've yep. learned that, oh, everything can go away at an instant, you know, that yep. now everyone's like, you know, it's become a bit more harder to get things approved. And, you know, I remember certain festivals would have like 30, 40 people teams. Like, I know Life is Beautiful in Vegas has always had a massive team. Obviously because it's such a big festival.
Yep.
And now like you probably see half of that, you know, a lot of the festivals that would hire.
I was going to say, go ahead.
Yeah. Like a lot of the festivals you see like 10 people team now is 5, you know, it's like, it's very hard to get, you know, it's been a slow climb to getting back to, from a money perspective to where it was before. Sure. Even though there's a lot of money floating around, I think it's just everyone's just being a bit more careful with how things are being spent. But at the end of the day, I mean, content is still king. Honestly, like we as creators are still top of that food chain when it yeah. comes to the music industry or any industry that requires content per se. So I'd like to see a bit of a change in that soon.
Yeah.
Cause like, yeah, you do see it.
Yeah. Did you see a lot of, I don't know if turnover is the right word, but did you see a lot of change? Cause I know a lot of people kind of got out of the industry when COVID happened because of the insecurity of, you know, not having, knowing when you're going to work. I saw a lot of people, and today I'm seeing a lot of, oh, we have shortages of guitar tech. So we have shortages of bus drivers and stuff like that. Are you seeing that?
Yes and no. The one thing I did see was a lot of creators that I knew that were like, you know, like I can't keep doing this. They went and got a job and, you know, started paying the bills and then probably yeah. started paying more. And it's like, you can't fault anybody for wanting to make, how they make their living. You know, I completely get it. A lot of things different, like, you know, a lot of them started families, a lot of got in relationships, you know, touring world and music world is very hard on relationships. I have come into, there's never a shortage of creators. It's just a shortage of the creators who really want to put the work. You know, my DMs are open. Sometimes Instagram doesn't like to show me all my DMs as it was the case with you. I was like, yours landed on it says hidden messages. And I made the joke to my girlfriend. I was like, what is this? And I clicked on it and there was like 100 DMs of people. Wow. I was like, there were some that are friends of mine that like I know and I've met. And I'm like, I don't even know why your messages are here.
Yeah.
But I always say like, you know, DMs are open. But everyone wants to shoot main stage from the get go. And I'm, you know, I always try to advise of like, hey, like, you know, yes, sometimes there are people who get there, you know, but that doesn't happen to everybody. That didn't happen to me. You know, like you like what I do. You tell me like, oh, I inspire you for this or the other. I'm like, I love that. That's great. I love hearing that. But I'm also going to tell you, it's like, hey, this wasn't handed to me on day one of me picking up a camera. My portfolio was terrible for about like 6 years, 7 years of my career. It took a long time for me to figure out what I wanted to show in my portfolio, how to show it, like what I was capturing. So there is never a shortage. It's just more of like, all right, like who really wants to do the job?
Right.
I feel like now it's like everything is so quick. Everyone wants to be famous so quick. And it's like, and I always tell people, I was like, if you want to be a personality, I'm not the guy who's going to get you there.
Right.
If you really want to have a career and you want to have a job and you want to learn and then get to a position where you want to be an industry leader, I'll help you get there. Yeah. A lot of people did that for me. And I always say like, I love doing that to any young creator, come and talk to me. Let's have a conversation. What help do you need? I'm going to be there and try to guide you as best as I can. Sometimes I can sit there and talk for a long period of time. Sometimes I may just have like 5 minutes because I'm running from one stage to another, or I'm going backstage, or whatever the case may be. But again, my DMs are always open. My emails are on my Instagram. You can always email me. So right now it's just, I think the shortage is of people or creators who really want to sink their teeth into something and really like take the time to really build a business. You know, everyone's getting famous from TikTok and Reels. I get it. I understand it. If that's what you want to do, by all means, you know, I remember when I was coming up, you know, being an Instagram influencer was looked down upon. To me, I was like, these influencers are buying $10 million homes. I don't mind it. If I could, I would. You know, that's, I don't have the personality, or not so much personality, but I don't have it in me to want to be like, hey guys, welcome to my YouTube. That's not my thing. But if it's your thing, and if you really want to do that, even those guys, the all those famous, the most famous of the famous, that didn't happen on day one. You know, some of these guys have been creating for a long time. So even if you want to be famous, you still have to put in a lot of work. Being an influencer, it's a lot of work. I've seen it happen. I have friends who, that's their job, to be on social media promoting whatever. And I've seen them take 50 takes for one video. And then they edit, and then they sit, and they have, you know, I shoot videos from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. And then I edit from 3 to 6. And then I make dinner, and then I do it. That's work. That is a 9-to-5 job. Yep. And it takes a lot, you know. So again, it's like there's not a shortage. It's just more of like, do you really want to do a job?
Yep.
Like, you know, yeah.
So you kind of mentioned it earlier with golfing and the bikes and stuff like that. But for you to kind of cleanse your palate of photography and stuff like that, what are your hobbies? Is that your hobby, or are there other things? What do you like to do besides photography?
Yeah, for me is all golf all the time. If I have free time, I'm golfing.
Yep.
I'm at the range. I'm playing golf. I'm traveling for golf, whatever. Playing golf with my girlfriend, everybody. If you want to play golf? Let's go play golf. That, I probably say yes to golf more than I do to photo jobs. but the funny thing is, during the pandemic, as in 2021, as things were kind of getting back out there, I had started a side hustle of being a social media manager, and my first four clients were golfers. And the funny thing is, I was seeing this one girl at the moment, and she was like, she said something to me. She was like, I thought like golf was your hobby. I was like, yeah, it is. He was like, but now, like you said, photography was your hobby. Like, you're doing it again, where you're like working within that hobby. And I was like, dang, she is right. And immediately I was like, listen, I'm going to send you to a friend of mine who is a wonderful social media manager. She's going to take care of all this stuff. I'm just going to enjoy it, not worried about it, not have any responsibilities within golf. And that, to me, that's my little outlet right now. I do work out. I do ride bikes. I do still do other things. I'm thankful. My girlfriend is the queen of planning. So there's never a shortage of day trips and planned trips and whatever trips where I'm like, yep, yes, I've learned to. If she tells me we're going somewhere, yep, no problem. I'll be there.
Nice.
And that's kind of been like now like a new thing, like, you know, taking the time of, you know, starting to enjoy those moments in life. You know, like, I don't need to be on every tour. I don't need to be on the road 10 months out of the year. I'm enjoying working from home. I'm enjoying like mentoring. I'm enjoying like the building of teams. I'll pop in into a few festivals here and there and some tours. But I'm enjoying it all. I'm enjoying it at that time. And yeah.
Nice.
So golf for me is the one. That's cool. Like the number one.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, that's great. And I know, a lot of artists will hit all of the local golf courses as they're on the road as well too.
Oh yeah.
There's several several bands
country
that have
music
done.
Artists, yeah. Country yeah. music artists, they travel with golf clubs.
Yeah.
And yeah,
Alice Cooper. I get, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, he's a huge golfer.
Yeah. He hit all our golf when he was at our area. He would hit all of the golf courses, you know, like 7 o'clock in the morning. He'd be out there, first one out there.
Oh, my bat. Oh, I'm jealous. I want to tour with an artist that plays golf every day like that.
Yeah, definitely.
I did it with Florida Georgia Line. They don't play as often, but I would. I loved when the first time I saw it was middle of 2021, like August 2021, when we were in like Great Lakes, Minnesota or something like that. And one of the production guys was taking out the golf clubs from the tour bus. And like, the bags were just sitting outside. And I looked at the tour manager. I was like, are we going golfing? Because this just turned out to be the greatest day ever. If this is what we're doing, he was like, yeah, we're going to go play golf. And I was like, am I bringing the camera or am I playing? He was like, no, you're going to bring your camera still. But when you get to play, I was like, this is I wish every artist did that.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, you know, I've taken a lot of your time. I really want to thank you so much for your time and your understanding with the rescheduling and stuff like that.
I appreciate what you do. It's funny. I had lots of friends who had sent me your series and I want to try to remember last year, what interview it was that I got sent where it was like, I was like, listen to this. This is pretty cool. I want to say it was the creator. Sorry, not the creator. It's a rock photographer. It was like episode 30 something, 37, 39. I'm trying to remember.
Probably Sanjay from Shinedown or something like that. Or I don't know.
I think so.
A couple. Yeah. We've had a lot. Yeah.
So I was very happy that you hit me up for this. I love doing these things. I love talking about photography and where the world is in regards to creation and trying to help out as much as I can. A long time ago, I was given advice, and what I appreciated about the advice was that it wasn't for me to keep. So I'd rather share that advice. And when I share it with everybody in any podcast I've done, I always say this thing. If I give you advice, it's not for you to keep. That is for you to share it when the time comes for you to share it. Some point, someone's going to come to you and say, I love what you do, da, 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 this and the other. If you take anything from what I've told you, it's for you to share that to someone else.
Yeah. Well said. Yeah. Excellent. Excellent information. Absolutely. Yeah. Appreciate it. So what's one last question? What is next for you? What do you got coming up for the rest of this year that you can talk about?
Yeah. So we have Coachella coming up, a bunch of stuff, a bunch of events for Coachella. I think we're going to have 15 creators out during Coachella weekend within the festival, with the events around the festival. We have one of my favorite festivals coming up, very small, but legit, it is, I say, the crowd at this festival is what every festival wishes the crowd was like everywhere. It's called Mustache Bash in San Diego. It's a disco festival, very small, but it's like, it's on the water. It's everyone's dressed up in disco gear. The music is disco house. They do have a house band that plays like Earth, Wind & Fire type stuff, but everyone's drinking, everyone's having fun. It's the most chill. San Diego is the most chill kind of environment while still a bit of a rager. It's kind of weird hard to describe, but it's just incredible. We have 15, 20 some odd festivals coming up, maybe something like that. Still have touring with Chainsmokers coming up. I got Asia at the end of this month. I have to go there with them. Got Coldplay coming up later on as well. There's something there in between that I can't quite say yet, because I've signed that I can't say anything till after the tour is over.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. But yeah, it's busy year. Like, still got my work here. Still got a lot of golf courses to play. I'm looking forward to some golf trips. I should hit up more of the Northeast. I feel like I haven't played golf in the Northeast at all. So I like to do that more. I want to do that more.
I'll be looking for, you know, as you're announcing what you're doing and stuff like that, I'll be looking to see if you come up to our area. If you ever come up to the New Hampshire venues, definitely our venue is the place to be at. And, you know, I'll definitely be looking for you.
I love that.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. All right. So where do people go to find you online? What's all your socials? Where do you direct everyone to?
Just my name, Danilo Lewis. Google it. I'll send you whatever. My site, Instagram. The only thing I don't have is Twitter. My Twitter is real Danilo Lewis, I think, because a guy who owns it doesn't want to sell it. His account is suspended. Someday I'll get it, but I can't. That's the only thing I don't have under my name. But everything else is Danilo Lewis. Let's go there. Send me a DM. Nice. Yeah.
Nice. And you have some killer, killer shots on your website. So I highly recommend people go check that out. I mean, some really, really, I wanted to get to some of that, but we're kind of running out of time, but some killer, killer shots. I'm hoping maybe, you know, in season 4, we can get you back and talk a little bit more technical and stuff like that.
100%. I love that. Count me in.
Yeah. All right. Well, cool. Well, so thank you again. Once again, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate your work and everything you've done. So again, thank you.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you for having me.
Hey, thanks for watching part 2 with our guest, music photographer Danilo Lewis. Great guy, great photos. Go check out his work, link in the show notes. You can check out our other guests and our other episodes on all your favorite podcast locations. You can also watch on YouTube, search for Tales from the Pit podcast. You can check out our website, talesfromthepit.net. I'm your host, Jason Levasseur, and I hope to catch you on the next one. This episode was edited and produced by me, Jason Levasseur. Visit talesfromthepit.net for more episodes just like this.
I would always have to amp up Pat, which is like the best. I'd be like, because like sometimes Pat would just be like, ah, you know, and it would just be like this. I'd be like, no, Pat, these are demons. You got to make sure that you're freaked out. And so Pat sometimes would just go from like this one level and then he'd go, oh yeah, you're right. And then the next take, it would be this enormous like scream and like freak out. And it was just like, this is, and that's exactly what you want. You want like him to go like way over the top. I love the over the topness of Pat. And we just kind of went with that and thought it was like the best thing ever when he would do that. It's funny because then we were doing ADR and Pat came up to me and like we had to do a couple of his lines. And I go, all right, Pat. And I didn't even think about it. I go, so we're going to get you just to scream a couple more times just for some background stuff when everybody will see. He goes, I can't. I go, what do you mean? He goes, well, ever since Studio 666, I screamed so much and so hard on that movie that it totally destroyed my, I can't scream anymore.
No.
And so I was like, I'm sorry.